We had been studying last week about Rabbi Meir, and we had seen that Rabbi Meir was a grandson or great-grandson of Niron, who was initially the general sent to destroy the temple, who repented and said, I don't want to be the one to destroy the temple. And he merited to have an offspring as great as Rabbi Meir. We had discussed that any time we have a Mishnah that the author is unidentified, the Mishnah seems to be stating an obvious view, it is really the view of Rabbi Meir. And the Gemara states, Galui v'yadua lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is openly revealed before God, that in and of itself needs to be defined. What does that mean? Are there things that are more revealed and less revealed? What does that mean? So it seems to be a borrowed term, Galui v'yadua, it is openly revealed, God knows everything equally well, but it seems to be that the Gemara means to say it's obvious before God, she'en b'drok moto, there are none like Rabbi Meir in his generation. V'lo kavu alacha kmoto. Nonetheless, the sages did not institute that the halacha would be like Rabbi Meir. She'lo yachlu chaverav la'amod al sof da'ato. For his friends could not fully understand the depth of his understanding. Rabbi Meir had such deep knowledge of the Torah that others just couldn't understand him. And that's why the halacha wasn't like him. He could come into the Beis Medrash and everyone would think that the halachic ruling about a certain instance should be that it should be pure, and he'd walk in and say, no, it's not pure, it's tameh. And then he'd walk in and everyone would think about a certain case that the ruling should be that it is not pure, and he'd walk in and say it is pure, and he'd umare lo panim, and he could prove it, he could prove his case, and everyone thought, wait, that doesn't exactly work. And they couldn't figure out exactly the depth of his knowledge, and that's why they did not rule like him, because you have to understand what the rabbi is saying. As you grow in learning, so God willing, you should reach a stage that you're allowed to give halachic ruling, and if one is of the level that he himself can give halachic ruling, then he may not quote someone else's ruling if he doesn't understand it. Meaning, if a rabbi is sitting and a case comes before him, and he knows that the halacha in this case should be that it is forbidden, and he knows there's another rabbi who said it is permitted, so if he's of the opinion that you could go either way, that both opinions have validity, so he could say, look, there's an opinion that says it's permitted, there's an opinion that says that it's forbidden, you could go with either one. But let's say this rabbi has learned this case and the sources pertaining to this case through and through, and he's come to the conclusion that this should be forbidden. And he knows there's another rabbi that says it's permitted, and he's been discussing with this rabbi back and forth, and he can't understand why that rabbi comes to the conclusion it should be permitted. So then he may not quote that other rabbi's ruling, because you cannot quote a ruling that you don't agree with. If you don't agree with it, then you have to quote your own ruling. Sometimes the rabbi will say, well, he's so much greater than me that I'm going to quote his ruling. There was a story of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zatzal, one of his famous arguments with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rabbi Feinstein had ruled one way, and Rabbi Orbach had come to the conclusion it should go the other way. But he knew that Rabbi Feinstein was the top of the generation. So before he would publish his ruling arguing on Rabbi Feinstein, he sent a copy to Rabbi Feinstein, and he said to him, this is my opinion, and these are the sources for my opinion. Am I allowed to publish it? Because out of humility, he understood that he knew that Rabbi Feinstein was the head of the generation, and he couldn't argue with him without his permission. So he could have published that essay, his halachic opinion, and said, well, I disagree with Rabbi Feinstein, I have the sources for it. But out of humility, he said, I'm not going to do that until I ask him. And when students here in Israel sent a question to Rabbi Feinstein about cooking the bones of chicken and the chulin on Shabbos, whether you could place the cover on the chulin pot, when by placing the cover on the chulin pot you're in essence causing those bones, the marrow, to cook better, which will be eaten on Shabbos. So the chulin is cooked, but the chicken bones, they're not fully cooked. No, you have a chicken, you have a chulin sitting in its pot on Shabbos, the chulin is fully cooked, but there are bones in the chulin, and those bones, if you leave the lid on, they'll get better cooked and they'll be eatable on edible Shabbos morning. And if you take the pot, when you take the cover off and you take out a serving of chulin Friday night, if you don't put that cover back on, they won't get cooked. So in essence, by your putting that cover back on, even though the all of the chont is cooked, but those bones will be cooked overnight because you put the cover back on the chonta. So Rabbi Orbach here in Israel had ruled one way, and students in the yeshiva had an issue with his ruling, so they sent a letter to Rabbi Feinstein quoting his ruling and asking him whether he agreed. So Rabbi Feinstein's response was, firstly, the rabbi in Israel is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and this is what he ruled, and this is his ruling in Israel. And in essence, I don't even want to answer you, because once he ruled, that's the ruling. But I disagree with him. And he went the other way, and he said, out of Israel, this is my ruling. In Israel, he's the rabbi. So our rabbis were always careful. There's a concept of Marad Atva, the one who gives halachic ruling in a specific place. I once came to Chicago, and they had a certain shaila. So they asked me. So I said, I don't know. So they said, no, you're lying. You do know. What's the answer? So I said, the answer is that there's a rabbi in this location. And this is a question which the ruling will last not only today, but it will be applied tomorrow as well. It's not a question right now, what do you do with this pot? And on any question that really affects the community, I have no right to answer when there's a rabbi present. So call the local Orthodox rabbi and he gives the ruling on this question. I don't answer. I had this twice, that from a certain community they called and asked me a question, said, I don't know. So they called me the next day, said, you get a chance to go? I said, I don't know and I'm not going to know. So they kept calling me, and so I said, guys, you have a rabbi. He has to rule how you go in this case. There's a child that was born Bein HaShemashel. He was born in the late afternoon. The question was when they should do the Bris Milah. So they knew I was a Moel, and they knew I'd learned a little bit, so they wanted me to answer. I said, no, you have a rabbi. He has to give the ruling. One rabbi can't interfere in another rabbi's vocation. So getting back to our story.
Yeah. Let's say like you're making a ruling. Would you be like, I guess you're not allowed to put the ruling in court. Are you allowed to say like, there's this other ruling that goes against me, but I don't understand it, so I'm just sort of like quoting it for completeness to anyone else studying your work?
Usually not. There's a story told. There was a very big debate about abortion. All the rabbis held it was forbidden, akin to murder. And there was one great rabbi here in Jerusalem known as Rav Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, who passed away about 2 months ago. And he ruled that in certain instances it would be permitted. And those were instances in which the consensus of rabbis disagreed. He's a big rabbi, put out about 18 volumes of responsa during his lifetime, and a lot of it is on medical issues. He was the rabbi of Shaarei Tzedek. And when he came out with that ruling, Rabbi Feinstein sent him a letter, and he told him, I hope you won't pay for the blood that will be spilled because of your ruling. And very harsh letters went back and forth, and neither one would give in. And each one brought proof to their case why they held that in these instances would be permitted and forbidden and permitted and forbidden. And a woman who had a few children was pregnant with a child that had Tay-Sachs. And they knew the child wouldn't live beyond the age of 3. And the family had undergone certain stress, and the doctor, the family's doctor, came to Shlomo Zalman Orbach and said, I want to know if you're willing to permit them to abort. They're at this such and such stage of the pregnancy, and such is the case, and we're scared that this will cause the mother, she might not be able to take it. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach said to him, you know, I hold that given the circumstances of this case and the state of the pregnancy that you're coming to me, I can't permit it. So the doctor was a rabbi in his own right. He's put out some volumes of responsa and halacha on his own. So he said, Rebbe, do me a favor, think it over, I'll get back to you in a week. Comes back a week later, Orbach tells him, you know, I hope you can't permit in such an instance to abort. So the doctor said, yes, but we're so concerned for the mother, and we're not sure what's going to be if she goes through with the pregnancy, how she's going to handle it emotionally. And we think that there's a very strong case in this case to be lenient. Do me a favor, Rebbe, think it over another week. So comes back after 3 weeks, and he's begging Rabbi Orbach to be lenient. Rabbi Orbach bursts into tears, and he tearfully tells him, tell her that there's a rabbi out near the shuk that's where Rav Waldenberg lived, who says it is permitted. There are times when a rabbi can say that, even though he doesn't hold of it. The other rabbi has halachic validity, and he can say, look, rely on that rabbi. We once had an instance where a person came to us with a certain halachic shayla about a fetus that had many, many, many issues. And I called Rabbi Feinstein, and he told me he can't go into all the medical details. So I said, I don't know of any rabbi in Jerusalem who will take this question on their shoulders, other than Rav Waldenberg, the Tzitzel Yezer. And I knew that Rabbi Feinstein and Rav Waldenberg had this fierce debate about abortion. So he said to me, he's a very good kosher rabbi. Call him up, and whatever he says, you can do. So even though there are fierce debates, when both rabbis are within orthodoxy, working out of the same tradition, so they can disagree. And Rabbi Feinstein can write, Rabbi Waldenberg, I hope you won't pay the price in heaven for the blood that's being spilled. But at the end of the day, Rabbi Feinstein says about Rabbi Waldenberg, he's a good kosher rabbi, and whatever he says, listen to him. So here, Rabbi Meir, the rabbis knew that he had a deeper understanding than they. But they couldn't take Rabbi Meir's ruling. Rabbi Meir was a great, great sage. Rebbe, the one who compiled the Mishnah, said, the reason I am sharper than my friends, the reason I have made it to a higher level than my friends, is because I merited to sit in the Beis Medrash when I was a kid. I was from the aristocracy. I was my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather were all Nassim. They were the princes. So I was able to sit as a kid in the Beis Medrash and see Rabbi Meir's back. I didn't see his face. The fact that I could see Rabbi Meir from behind, sitting and learning, that's what caused me to be where I am today. So Rabbi Meir was so great that the sages said, we can't understand him. And in spite of the fact that they recognized his greatness, they couldn't rule that the halacha is with him. The Gemara records that he was a sofer, he was a scribe, and he had a tremendous memory. He remembered the whole Tanakh, including those missing letters and added letters. The Gemara says he once came to a town where there was no Megillah on Purim. So he sat down by memory and wrote the whole Megillah. The Gemara says, but you're not allowed to write a Megillah by memory. You can't write a Megillah from your memory. A Megillah must be transcribed from another Megillah. So the Gemara says, yes, that's what he did. He wrote down one Megillah from memory, and then he copied from the first Megillah to the second Megillah, so he was copying from the written Megillah. It doesn't say that the first Megillah cannot be written by memory. That was Rabbi Meir. And now, what?
He copy it from a kosher Megillah.
Doesn't say, I don't know. You say it doesn't say that. You see, the Gemara accepted that. The truth is that the Babli doesn't say that. The Yerushalmi adds that second stage from one Megillah to another Megillah. The Gemara tells us, the Gemara we have in front of us, we'll begin maybe with the Gemara in Harios. Yeah, we'll leave the Gemara in Yuma for next week. The Gemara in Harios, Daf Yud Dalet Amid Beis, tells us the following story. We're holding Daf Yudalit on the base, the middle of the page. You have on the right, one word in, you have like a ches with a half moon after it. Bimei Ramanshim Mengamliel Mishnet Mishnazo. The following Mishnah was quoted during the days of Ramanshim Mengamliel. The first word on the line is Yochanan. You guys have it? You're on the wrong side of the page.
Here we go.
So 26 on top of the page, middle of the page, the beginning line is Yochanan, and then you have a ches with a half moon after, the small ches. The following Mishnah was really recorded during the days of Shem ben Gamliel. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Nasi. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, he was the prince, he was the one who headed the Jewish people at the time. Rabbi Meir Chacham. Rabbi Meir was the wise man. He was considered the Chacham. He was like the chief rabbi. The only one above him was Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who was the Nasi. Rabbi Natan of Betin, and Rabbi Natan headed the court. Now, Ki Hava Rabban Shimon Gamliel Hatan, you guys have it?
Mm-hmm.
When Rabban Shimon Gamliel would come into the Beis Medrash, to the learning hall, Habukai Mikuli Alma Mikanei, everyone would stand in his honor. Ki Avraili Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan, when Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan would enter the assembly, Havukai Mikuli Alma Mikamayu, everyone would stand in their honor. Now, that showed that halachically, they were of equal weight, and there was a problem. Because halachically, really, the Nasi is supposed to have a greater weight. He's supposed to have the final word. Takin Rabban Shimon ben, Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel said, Lo ba'o lemeve ikera ben dili levitu, shouldn't there really be a discernment between me and them, so that it is clear that we have different halachic weights? Takin amat nita. So he established the following Tanai quote, which is quoted on the first wide line. We'll read it for a second. Tanu Abanan, the Tanai quote says as follows. Kshanasi nichnas, when the Nasi, the prince, enters, kol am umdim, everyone stands, ven yashvina shomer bem shvum, they don't sit down, so he tells them sit. Kshavbeti nichnas, when the head of the court enters, osim lo shua achat mikan, lo shua achat mikan, ad yishev bin kumo, every row he passes, stands up as he passes. So you have a wave of people standing and sitting as he passes through. But it's not that they stand and remain standing until he tells them sit. Kshachacham nichnas, when the wise man, the chacham, the chief rabbi enters, echad omed v'echad yoshev ad sheyoshev b'mekomo. So one by one the people that he passes stand as he sits in his place. So this institution that there was, they would stand in a different fashion when the chacham enters and the avdetin enters and the nasi enters, this was instituted in Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel's time. And when he made this institution, so Hahu Yoma on that day, back to where we were in the middle of the page, Lohavu Rabbi Meir Rabbi Natan. So back to the beginning of the line, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan were not there in the Beis Medrash. They weren't Hatan, they weren't over there. Lemachal Kiyatu, the next day when they came to the hall, to the assembly to learn, Chazu Delokamu Mikamau Kedorgila. They saw, Delokamu, that the people didn't rise Mikamau from their presence, kederegila, the way they had been accustomed to. Kederegila milta, as the words, the thing had been accustomed. Amri mayai, they said, what's going on? Amru lehu, so the people told them, hachi takin Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. This is what Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel established, to discern the halachic weight, his halachic weight and your halachic weight, that each one has different strengths. Amar le Rabbi Meir Rav Natan. So Rabbi Meir heard this, and he was upset. What's going on here? In this generation, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel should have more halachic weight than me and Rabbi Natan. In truth, we know more than he does. How could he take this halachic weight? So Rabbi Meir tells Rabbi Natan, "Ana chacham ve'atav betim. I'm the chacham, and you're the head of the court. Nitkin milta ki ledidan. Let's establish things the way we see is right. My nevid leg. How will we prove to him that he's not on a level that he could take this halachic weight above us?" Neimalei will tell him, Gan Yuchtin, why don't you tell us, there's one small tractate at the very end of Shas that discusses the, you know, when you pick a fruit, so it has a little bit of the tree, a little bit of the twig sticking out of it. So that little bit of the twig, what's that called, name? Is that name? In Hebrew it's called an ukitz. When you have the top of an apple, it has a little bit of the tree on it, right?
Oh,
the stem. So that, those stems, in Hebrew are called an ukitz, and there's a whole tractate that discusses those stems, when are they considered part of the fruit and when not, when can they become tameh, when can they become halachically impure because they're part of the fruit, and when do we consider them as part of the tree.
So,
it would be, but sometimes you have to know, and from there we derive other things about the halachic status of fruit and their stems and the tree. So it's a very small tractate which discusses a very particular issue. And they knew that Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel was not well versed in that tractate. And they said, let's ask him tomorrow, why don't you teach us this tractate? And he'll be stuck. He doesn't know that tractate. And that'll show him, that'll be an example to show him that really he does not have a right to take this halachic weight ahead of us. So they said, what'll we do? We'll ask him, please reveal to us this tractate, the letle, that we know he doesn't know well. And being that he doesn't know that tractate, Neimalei will tell him, Mi malel gvurot Hashem. The verse says, who could sing the praises of God? Yashmiya kol tilato, could make heard all of God's praises. And from this verse we derive Lemin ele imalev b'vot Hashem, to who is it fitting to sing the praises of God, to be at the head of the Jewish people, to be the prince? Mishiachol Hashemach kol tilotav, only a person who could make heard all of God's praises, all of the Torah. He's lacking one track, see? He's not fit to be the prince. This will be the way we'll prove to him. Navre, we'll remove him from his status as prince. And Rabbi Meir said, I'll take the position of head of the court. Ve'at, and you, Rabbi Natan, you'll be Nasir, you'll be the prince. We'll remove him, we'll impeach him, we'll show him that he's not fitting to have this post. Now that he wants to change the halachic weight of us three, we'll show him that fine, we'll change the halachic weight, but he doesn't have the right to be at the top. Shem'inu Rabbi Yaakov ben Karshi. Rabbi Yaakov ben Karshi heard their plan. Amari said, Din machas shlom al tamitil de chisufa. Maybe, God forbid, they'll shame him in front of everyone. They have a plan as far as halachic ways. But bottom line, some shimming aliyah might be embarrassed. They're going to ask him, why don't you teach us this tractate? And he'll have to say, I don't know. So there's a tractate in Shas he doesn't know. Azal, so what did he do? He went. Yativa chorei ilite. He sat behind Rabban Shimon Gamliel's elevated flat. Ilite de Rabban Shimon Gamliel. The elevated flat of Rabban Shimon Gamliel. Pashat, garas, betana. Garas, betana. He started saying over the tractate of Uktin backwards and forwards, saying it again and again all night long. Rabban Shimon Gamliel is trying to go to sleep, and someone sitting out under his window repeating this tractate. Amal maite kama. So I'm sitting there and say, what's going on? How come someone's sitting here under my window reviewing this tractate just under my window? He said, maybe, God forbid, something's going on in the base mandrish. Yavda teve gavsa. So I'm sitting there and said, okay, someone's giving me a hint here. He stayed up that night, listened by the window, and learned the tractate of Uktin by heart, which isn't too complicated. It's all three chapters. The next day, he walks into Beis Medrash, and they tell him, come, our rabbi, teach us, let's learn the tractate of Uktin, about stems. Patach v'amal, so he sat there and rattled it off. Bato be'ukim, after they got up from the learning, amal lehu, he told the two, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan, ilo gamirna, if I went to learn it by heart last night, Kasifitna, you would have embarrassed me. You did something improper. Pakid, he gave a command. They kicked him out of Beis Medrash. So you have the top two rabbis, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan, sitting, kicked out. They're kicked out of class. They're sitting outside. And they're not kids. We're talking about big rabbis. This is Rabbi Meir we're talking about. Rabbi Meir that was so great that the rabbis couldn't fully understand him. He was so deep. Havukati Kushyatas, they didn't leave the Beis Medrash. Their life was burning. So they sat outside the Beis Medrash, and they'd write their questions and send them in by note. Veshaduhatam, they'd send them into the Beis Medrash. The Havu Mifrik, the questions that the Beis Medrash could figure out the answer, so they'd figure out the answer. The Lavu Mifrik, that they couldn't figure out the answer. Katvi Tiruke, so Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Meir would write the answer after they send in the question. They'd sit inside the Beis Medrash, try to figure out the answer. If they couldn't figure out the answer, so they'd hear what was going on inside, they'd write the answer and send it in. Vishadun, they send the answer inside. Amalu Rabbi Yossi. So the great sage Rabbi Yossi said to the other rabbis, Torami bachutz v'anami bifnim. The Torah is sitting outside and we're all sitting inside. We're learning from them. They're sending in the answers as well. Amalem Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel ne'ailinu. So Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, the head, said, okay, we'll bring them back in. Mihu niknasinu, but we will tax them. Dilonemu shmaita mishmayu, that we will no longer quote their Torah in their names. From now on, when we quote the verses that Rabbi Meir says, we will not quote it in his name. Asiku Rabbi Meir acherim, they changed Rabbi Meir, that when Rabbi Meir's opinion is quoted in the Mishnah, it is no longer quoted as Rabbi Meir, but rather the Mishnah says acherim, other people, they have the opinion such and such. So notice they gave Rabbi Meir tremendous halachic weight. They gave him the halachic weight of a majority opinion. They didn't say acher, the other person said. They said acherim, the others in plural. They have the opinion such and such. But nonetheless, when we have in the Mishnah acherim olim, others say, that's really Rabbi Meir. But that's a case of a Mishnah where the rabbis taxed him. Vili Rabbi Natan, and they changed all the quotes in the Mishnah that were quoted in the name Rabbi Natan to yeshomim. There are those that say. again, giving him great halachic weight, giving him a majority opinion. There are those that say, nonetheless, not quoting his Torah in his name. Right, and Rabbi Meir was Rabbi Natan is there those who say Yeshomrim, and Rabbi Meir was others say Acherim. And next week we will learn about Rabbi Meir's Rebbe Elisha ben Avuya, who became Acher, which is part of the reason they called him Acherim, others say, because the rabbis held it against him that Rabbi Meir continued learning by Elisha ben Avuya. When his Rebbe decided that he's going to stop keeping the Torah, Rabbi Meir said, I'm still learning from him. I don't know how to discern what's good Torah and what's bad. And Rabbi Meir didn't leave him, and the rabbis held that against him. And that's part of the reason that they changed his quotes to Acherim. This is an allusion to his Rebbe Acher. Achbu lehu, they showed both of them, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan, bechalmayu, in their dreams, zilu paisu l'Rabban Shimon Gamliel. Go appease Rabban Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Natan hazal, so Rabbi Natan went. He saw a dream that said, go appease him, so he went. Rabbi Meir lo azal. Rabbi Meir said, I'm not going. Amar, he said, divrei chalomot lo malin velo moridin. From dreams you don't change your mind. Dreams are worthless. I hold halachically I was right, so what if they're telling me in a dream to go and ask his forgiveness? I did nothing wrong. I don't change my mind. This is my opinion halachically. And this is where we'll pick up next week. Unfortunately, we're out of time, so we'll have to continue next week. Unless we see that no one shows up. You guys want to continue another 5 minutes? Will you make it to Meir?
Yes. After that.
Yeah, so, okay, we'll stop there. We'll have to pick up next week from here. Unless, if we see that...